Free Will, from the Wikipedia Free Encyclopedia. This article covers the non-theological aspects of free will. For the theological aspects, see Free Will and Theology. For the music label, see Free Will Label. The problem of free will is the problem of whether human beings exercise control over their own actions and decisions. Addressing this problem requires understanding the relationship between freedom and causation and determining whether or not the laws of nature are causally deterministic. The various positions taken on the problem, therefore, differ on whether all events are determined or not, determinism versus indeterminism, and differ on whether freedom can coexist with determinism or not, compatibilism versus incompatibilism. So, for instance, hard determinists argue that the universe is deterministic and that this makes free will impossible. The principle of free will has religious, ethical, and scientific implications. For example, in the religious realm, free will may imply that an omnipotent divinity does not assert its power over individual will and choices. In ethics, it may imply that individuals can be held morally accountable for their actions. In psychology, it may imply that the mind controls some of the actions of the body. In the scientific realm, it may imply that the actions of the body, including the brain, are not wholly determined by physical causality. The question of free will has been a central issue since the beginning of philosophical thought. Section: Free Will in Philosophy. The basic philosophical positions on the problem of free will can be divided in accordance with the answers they provide to two questions. One, is determinism true? And two, does free will exist? Determinism is roughly defined as the view that all current and future events are necessitated by past events combined with the laws of nature. It is important to note that neither determinism nor its opposite, non-determinism, are positions in the debate about free will. Compatibilism is a view that accepts both the existence of free will and the truth of determinism, claiming that they are compatible with each other. Incompatibilism is the view that there is no way to reconcile a belief in a deterministic universe with a belief in free will. Hard determinism is the version of incompatibilism that accepts the truth of determinism and rejects the idea that humans have any free will. Metaphysical libertarianism agrees with hard determinism only in rejecting compatibilism. Since libertarians accept the existence of free will, they must reject determinism and argue for some version of indeterminism that is compatible with freedom. Section: Determinism. Determinism is a broad term which encompasses a variety of meanings. Corresponding to each of these different usages, there arises a different problem of free will. Causal, or nomological, determinism is a thesis that future events are necessitated by past and present events combined with the laws of nature. Such determinism is sometimes illustrated by the thought experiment of Laplace's demon. Imagine an entity that knows all facts about the past and the present, and knows all natural laws that govern the universe. Such an entity is able to use this knowledge to foresee the future down to the smallest detail. Logical determinism is the notion that all propositions, whether about the past, present, or future, are either true or false. The problem of free will in this context is a problem of how choices can be free, given that what one does in the future is already determined as true or false in the present. Theological determinism is a thesis that there is a God who determines all that humans will do, either by knowing their actions in advance via some form of omniscience, or by decreeing their actions in advance. The problem of free will in this context is a problem of how our actions can be free if there is a being who has already determined them for us ahead of time. Biological determinism is the idea that all behavior, belief, and desire are fixed by our genetic endowment. There are other theses on determinism, including cultural determinism and psychological determinism. In this article, only causal determinism is discussed. A section: Compatibilism. Compatibilists maintain that determinism is compatible with free will. A common strategy employed by classical compatibilists such as Thomas Hobbes is to claim that a person acts freely only when the person willed the act and the person could have done otherwise if the person had decided to. In articulating this crucial proviso, David Hume writes, quote, "This hypothetical liberty is universally allowed to belong to everyone who is not a prisoner and in chains," close quote. To illustrate their position, compatibilists point to clear-cut cases of someone's free will being denied through rape, murder, theft, or other forms of constraint. In these cases, free will is lacking not because the past is causally determining the future, but because the aggressor is overriding the victim's desires and preferences about his own actions. The aggressor is coercing the victim, and according to the compatibilists, this is what overrides free will. Thus, they argue that determinism does not matter. What matters is that individuals' choices are the results of their own desires and preferences, and are not overridden by some external or internal force. To be a compatibilist, one need not endorse any particular conception of free will, but only deny that determinism is at odds with free will. William James' views were ambivalent. While he believed in free will on ethical grounds, he did not believe that there was evidence for it on scientific grounds. Moreover, if he did not accept incompatibilism as formulated above, he did not believe that the indeterminism of human actions was a prerequisite of moral authority. In his work Pragmatism, he wrote that, quote, "instinct and utility between them can safely be trusted to carry on the social business of punishment and praise," close quote, regardless of metaphysical theories. He did believe that indeterminism is important as a doctrine of relief. It allows for the view that, although the world may be in many respects a bad place, it may, through individuals' actions, become a better one. Determinism, he argued, undermines meliorism, the idea that progress is a real concept leading to improvement in the world. Modern compatibilists, such as Harry Frankfurt and Daniel Dennett, argue that there are cases where a coerced agent's choices are still free because such coercion coincides with the agent's personal intentions and desires. Frankfurt, in particular, argues for a version of compatibilism called the hierarchical mesh. The idea is that an individual can have conflicting desires at a first-order level, and also have a desire about the various first-order desires, a second-order desire, to the effect that one of the desires prevails over the others. A person's will is to be identified with her effective first-order desire, that is, the one that she acts on. So, for example, there are wanton addicts, unwilling addicts, and willing addicts. All three groups may have the conflicting first-order desires to want to take the drug to which they are addicted and do not want to take it. The first group has no second-order desire not to take the drug. The second group has a second-order desire not to take the drug, while the third group has a second-order desire to take it. According to Frankfurt, the members of the first group are to be considered devoid of will and therefore no longer persons. The members of the second group freely desire not to take the drug, but their will is overcome by the addiction. Finally, the members of the third group willingly take the drug to which they are addicted. Frankfurt's theory can ramify to any number of levels. Critics of the theory point out that there is no certainty that conflicts will not arise even at the higher order levels of desire and preference. Others argue that Frankfurt offers no adequate explanation of how the various levels in the hierarchy mesh together. In Elbow Room, Dennett presents an argument for a compatibilist theory of free will, which he further elaborated in the book Freedom Evolves. The basic reasoning is that if one excludes God, an infinitely powerful demon, and other such possibilities, then because of chaos and quantum randomness, the future is ill-defined for all finite beings. The only well-defined things are expectations. The ability to do otherwise only makes sense when dealing with these expectations, and not with some unknown and unknowable future. Since individuals have the ability to act differently from what anyone expects, free will can exist. Incompatibilists claim that the problem with this idea is that we may be mere automata responding in predictable ways to stimuli in our environment. Therefore, All of our actions are controlled by forces outside ourselves or by random chance. More sophisticated analyses of compatibilist free will have been offered, as have other critiques. Section Incompatibilism. Hard determinists such as de Halbach are those incompatibilists who accept determinism and reject free will. Metaphysical libertarians such as Thomas Reed, Peter Van Inwagen, and Robert Kane are those incompatibilists who accept free will and deny determinism, holding the view that some form of indeterminism is true. One of the traditional arguments for incompatibilism is based on the intuition pump, the idea simply that if man is determined in his choices of actions, then he must be like other mechanical things that are determined in their behavior. That is, if man's behavior is causally determined, then he's nothing more sophisticated than a wind-up toy, a billiard ball, a puppet, or a robot. Since these things have no free will, then man must have no free will if determinism is true. This argument's been rejected by compatibilists such as Daniel Dennett on the ground that even if humans have something in common with these things, it does not follow that there are no important differences. Another argument for incompatibilism is that of the causal chain. To understand this argument, it is important to know that most incompatibilists reject the idea that freedom of action consists simply in voluntary behavior. They insist, rather, that free will means that man must be the ultimate or originating cause of his actions. He must be a causa sui, in the general phrase. To be responsible for one's choices is to be the first cause of those choices, where first cause means there is no antecedent cause of that cause. The argument, then, is that if man has free will, then man is the ultimate cause of his action. If determinism is true, then all of man's choices are caused by events and facts outside his control. So, if everything man does is caused by events and facts outside his control, then he cannot be the ultimate cause of his actions. Therefore, he cannot have free will. This argument has also been challenged by various compatibilist philosophers. A third argument for incompatibilism was formulated by Carl Ginnett in the 1960s and has received much attention in the modern literature. The simplified argument runs along these lines. If determinism is true, then we have no control over the events of the past that determined our present state and no control over the laws of nature. Since we can have no control over these matters, we also can have no control over the consequences of them. Since our present choices and acts under determinism are the necessary consequences of the past and the laws of nature, then we have no control over them and, hence, no free will. This is called the consequence argument. The difficulty of this argument for compatibilists lies in the fact that it entails the impossibility that one could have chosen other than one has. For example, if Jane is a compatibilist and she has just sat down on the sofa, then she is committed to the claim that she could have remained standing if she had so desired. But it follows from the consequence argument that if Jane had remained standing, she would have either generated a contradiction, violated the laws of nature, or changed the past. Hence, compatibilists are committed to the existence of incredible abilities, according to Ginnett and Van Inwagen. One response to this argument is that it equivocates on the notions of abilities and necessities. David Lewis suggests that compatibilists are only committed to the ability to do something otherwise if different circumstances had actually obtained in the past. Section Other Views. Some philosophers' views are difficult to categorize as either compatibilist or incompatibilist, hard determinist or libertarian. John Locke, for example, denied that the phrase free will made any sense. He also took the view that the truth of determinism was irrelevant. He believed that the defining feature of voluntary behavior was that individuals have the ability to postpone a decision long enough to reflect or deliberate upon the consequences of a choice. Quote, "The will, in truth, signifies nothing but a power or ability to prefer or choose." Close quote. Arthur Schopenhauer put the puzzle of free will and moral responsibility in these terms. A long quote here. "Everyone believes himself a priori to be perfectly free, even in his individual actions, and thinks that at every moment he can commence another manner of life. But a posteriori, through experience, he finds to his astonishment that he is not free, but subjected to necessity, that in spite of all his resolutions and reflections, he does not change his conduct, and that from the beginning of his life to the end of it, he must carry out the very character which he himself condemns." Close quote. In his On the Freedom of the Will, Schopenhauer stated, quote, "You can do what you will, but in any given moment of your life, you can will only one definite thing and absolutely nothing other than that one thing." Close quote. The contemporary philosopher Galen Strawson agrees with Locke that the truth or falsity of determinism is irrelevant to the problem. He argues that the notion of free will leads to an infinite regress and is therefore senseless. According to Strawson, if one is responsible for what one does in a given situation, then one must be responsible for the way one is in a certain mental respect. But it is impossible for one to be responsible for the way one is in any respect. This is because, in order to be responsible for the way one is in some situation S, one must have been responsible for the way one was at S minus 1. In order to be responsible for the way one was at S minus 1, one must have been responsible for the way one was at S minus 2, and so on. At some point in the chain, there must have been an act of origination of a new causal chain, but this is impossible. Man cannot create himself or his mental states ex nihilo. This argument entails that free will itself is absurd, but not that it is incompatible with determinism. Strawson calls his own view pessimism. Ted Hondrick holds the view that determinism is true, compatibilism and incompatibilism are both false, and that the real problem lies elsewhere. Hondrick maintains that determinism is true because quantum phenomena are not events or things that can be located in space and time, but are abstract entities. Further, even if they were micro-level events, they do not seem to have any relevance to how the world is at the macroscopic level. He maintains that incompatibilism is false because, even if determinism is true, incompatibilists have not and cannot provide an adequate account of origination. He rejects compatibilism because it, like incompatibilism, assumes a single fundamental notion of freedom. There are really two notions of freedom, voluntary action and origination. Both notions are needed in order to explain freedom of will and responsibility. Both determinism and indeterminism are threats to such freedom. To abandon these notions of freedom would be to abandon moral responsibility. But on the one side, we have our intuitions, on the other, the scientific facts. The new problem is how to resolve this conflict. Section: Moral Responsibility. Society generally holds people responsible for their actions and will say that they deserve praise or blame for what they do. However, many believe that moral responsibility requires free will. Thus, another important issue is whether individuals are ever morally responsible for their actions, and if so, in what sense? Incompatibilists tend to think that determinism is at odds with moral responsibility. It seems impossible that one can hold someone responsible for an action that could be predicted from the beginning of time. Hard determinists say, so much the worse for free will, and discard the concept. Clarence Darrow, the famous defense attorney, pleaded the innocence of his clients, Leopold and Loeb, by invoking such a motion of hard determinism. During a summation, he declared, and this is a quote, "What has this boy to do with it? He was not his own father, he was not his own mother, he was not his own grandparents. All of this was handed to him. He did not surround himself with governesses and wealth. He did not make himself, and yet he is to be compelled to pay." Conversely, libertarians say, so much the worse for determinism. Daniel Dennett asked why anyone would care about whether someone had the property of responsibility and speculates that the idea of moral responsibility may be a purely metaphysical hankering. Jean-Paul Sartre argues that people sometimes avoid incrimination and responsibility by hiding behind determinism. Quote, "We are always ready to take refuge in a belief in determinism if this freedom weighs upon us or if we need an excuse." Close quote. The issue of moral responsibility is at the heart of the dispute between hard determinist and compatibilist. Hard determinists are forced to accept that individuals often have free will in the compatibilist sense, but they deny that this sense of free will can ground moral responsibility. The fact that an agent's choices are unforced, hard determinists claim, does not change the fact that determinism robs the agent of responsibility. Compatibilists argue, on the contrary, that determinism is a prerequisite for moral responsibility. Society cannot hold someone responsible unless his actions were determined by something. This argument can be traced back to Hume. If determinism is true, then those events that are not determined are random. It is doubtful that one can praise or blame someone for performing an action generated spontaneously by his nervous system. Instead, one needs to show how the action stemmed from the person's desires and preferences, the person's character, before one can hold the person morally responsible. Libertarians may reply that undetermined actions are not random at all, and that they result from a substantive will whose decisions are undetermined. This argument is considered unsatisfactory by compatibilists, for it just pushes the problem back a step. It also seems to involve some mysterious metaphysics, as well as the concept of ex nihilo nihil fit. Libertarians have responded by trying to clarify how undetermined will could be tied to robust agency. St. Paul, in his epistle to the Romans, addresses the question of moral responsibility as follows, quote, "Hath not the potter power over the clay, of the same lump to make one vessel unto honor and another unto dishonor?" Close quote. In this view, individuals can still be dishonored for their acts, even though those acts were ultimately completely determined by God. A similar view has it that individual moral culpability lies in individual character, that is, a person with the character of a murderer has no choice other than to murder, but can still be punished because it is right to punish those of bad character. How one's character was determined is irrelevant from this perspective. Hence, Robert Cummins and others argue that people should not be judged for their individual actions, but rather for how those actions reflect on their character. If character, however defined, is the dominant causal factor in determining one's choices, and one's choices are morally wrong, then one should be held accountable for those choices, regardless of genes or other such factors. One exception to the assumption that moral culpability lies in either individual character or freely willed acts is in cases where the insanity defense, or corollary, diminished responsibility, can be used to argue that the guilty deed was not the product of a guilty mind. In such cases, the legal systems of most Western societies assume that the person is in some way not at fault because his actions were a consequence of abnormal brain function. Joshua Green and Jonathan Cohen, researchers in the emerging field of neuroethics, argue, on the basis of such cases, that our current notion of moral responsibility is founded on libertarian and dualist intuitions. They argue that cognitive neuroscience research is undermining these intuitions by showing that the brain is responsible for actions not only in cases of florid psychosis, but even in less obvious situations. For example, damage to the frontal lobe reduces the ability to weigh uncertain risks and make prudent decisions, and therefore leads to an increased likelihood that someone will commit a violent crime. This is true not only of patients with damage to the frontal lobe due to accident or stroke, but also of adolescents who show reduced frontal lobe activity compared to adults, and even of children who are chronically neglected or mistreated. In each case, a guilty party can be said to have less responsibility for his actions. Green and Cohen predict that, as such examples become more common and well-known, jurors' interpretations of free will and moral responsibility will move away from the intuitive libertarian notion which currently underpins them. Green and Cohen also argue that the legal system does not require this libertarian interpretation. Only retributive notions of justice, in which the goal of the legal system is to punish people for misdeeds, require the libertarian intuition. Consequentialist approaches to justice, which are aimed at promoting future welfare rather than meting out just deserts, can survive even a hard determinist interpretation of free will. The legal system and notions of justice can thus be maintained even in the face of emerging neuroscientific evidence undermining libertarian intuitions of free will. Section Science and Free Will, Section Physics and Free Will. Since the beginnings of science, people have attempted to solve the problem of free will using scientific methods. Early scientific thought often pictured the universe as deterministic, and some thinkers believed that it was simply a matter of gathering sufficient information to be able to predict future events with perfect accuracy. This vision entailed that free will must be an illusion. Modern science, on the other hand, is a mixture of deterministic and stochastic theories. The possibility that the universe at the macroscopic level may be governed by indeterministic laws, as it is at the quantum level, has revived interest in free will among physicists. Quantum mechanics predicts events only in terms of probabilities, casting doubt on whether the universe is deterministic at all. Some scientific determinists, following Albert Einstein, believe in so-called hidden variable theories that entail that beneath the probabilities of quantum mechanics there are fixed variables, see the EPR paradox. These theories were cast into doubt by the discovery of Bell's inequality. Robert Kane has capitalized on the success of quantum mechanics and chaos theory in order to defend incompatibilist freedom in his The Significance of Free Will and other writing. In 1928, in a speech to the German League for Human Rights, Einstein summarized his dismissal of free will in these terms, a large quote, "I don't believe in the freedom of the will. Schopenhauer's saying that a human can very well do what he wants, but cannot will what he wants, accompanies me in all of life's circumstances and reconciles me with the actions of humans, even when they are truly distressing. This knowledge of the non-freedom of the will protects me from losing my good humor and taking much too seriously myself and my fellow humans as acting and judging individuals." Section: Genetics and Free Will. Like physicists, biologists have frequently addressed questions related to free will. One of the most heated debates in biology is that of nature versus nurture, concerning the relative importance of genetics and biology as compared to culture and environment in human behavior. The view of most researchers is that many human behaviors can be explained in terms of humans' brains, genes, and evolutionary histories. This raises the fear that such attribution makes it impossible to hold others responsible for their actions. Steven Pinker's view is that fear of determinism in the context of genetics and evolution is a mistake, that it is, quote, a confusion of explanation with exculpation, close quote. Responsibility doesn't require behavior to be uncaused as long as behavior responds to praise and blame. Moreover, it is not certain that environmental determination is any less threatening to free will than genetic determination. Section: Neuroscience and Free Will. It has become possible to study the living brain, and researchers can now watch the brain's decision-making machinery, as it were, at work. A seminal experiment in this field was conducted by Benjamin Libet in the 1980s, in which he asked each subject to choose a random moment to flick her wrist while he measured the associated activity in her brain, in particular the buildup of electrical signal called the readiness potential. Although it was well known that the readiness potential preceded the physical action, Libet asked whether the readiness potential corresponded to the felt intention to move. To determine when the subject felt the intention to move, he asked her to watch the second hand of a clock and report its position when she felt that she had the conscious will to move. Libet found that the unconscious brain activity leading up to the conscious decision by the subject to flick his or her wrist began approximately half a second before the subject consciously felt that she had decided to move. Libet's findings suggest that decisions made by a subject are first being made on a subconscious level and only afterward being translated into a conscious decision, and that the subject's belief that it occurred at the behest of her will was only due to her retrospective perspective on the event. The interpretation of these findings has been criticized by Daniel Dennett, who argues that people will have to shift their attention from their intention to the clock, and that this introduces temporal mismatches between the felt experience of will and the perceived position of the clock hand. Consistent with this argument, subsequent studies have shown that the exact numerical value varies depending on attention. Despite the differences in the exact numerical value, however, the main finding has held. In a variation of this task, Haggart and Emir ask subjects to decide not only when to move their hands, but also to decide which hand to move. In this case, the felt intention correlated much more closely with the lateralized readiness potential, the LRP, an EEG component which measures the difference between left and right hemisphere brain activity. Haggart and Emir argued that the feeling of conscious will, therefore, must follow the decision of which hand to move, since the LRP reflects the decision to lift a particular hand. Related experiments showed that neurostimulation could affect which hands people move, even though the experience of free will was intact. Amon and Gandeva found it was possible to influence which hand people move by stimulating frontal regions that are involved in movement planning using transcranial magnetic stimulation in either the left or right hemisphere of the brain. Right-handed people would normally choose to move their right hand 60% of the time, but when the right hemisphere was stimulated, they would instead choose their left hand 80% of the time. Recall that the right hemisphere of the brain is responsible for the left side of the body, and the left hemisphere for the right. Despite the external influence on their decision-making, the subjects continued to report that they believed their choice of hand had been made freely. In a follow-up experiment, Alvaro Pascual-Leon and colleagues found similar results, but also noted that the transcranial magnetic stimulation must occur within 200 milliseconds, consistent with the time course derived from the Leibay experiment. Despite these findings, Leibay himself does not interpret his experiment as evidence of the inefficacy of conscious free will. He points out that although the tendency to press a button may be building up for 500 milliseconds, the conscious will retains a right to veto that action in the last few milliseconds. According to this model, unconscious impulses to perform a volitional act are open to suppression by the conscious efforts of the subject, sometimes referred to as free won't. A comparison is made with a golfer who may swing a club several times before striking the ball. The action simply gets a rubber stamp of approval at the last millisecond. A section, Neurology and Psychiatry. There are several brain-related conditions in which an individual's actions are not felt to be entirely under his or her control. Although the existence of such conditions does not directly refute the existence of free will, the study of such conditions, like the neuroscientific studies above, is valuable in developing models of how the brain may construct our experience of free will. For example, people with Tourette syndrome and related tic disorders make involuntary movements and utterances called tics, despite the fact that they would prefer not to do so when it is socially inappropriate. Tics are described as semi-voluntary or involuntary because they are not strictly involuntary. They may be experienced as a voluntary response to an unwanted premonitory urge. Tics are experienced as irresistible and must eventually be expressed. People with Tourette syndrome are sometimes able to suppress their tics to some extent for limited periods, but doing so often results in an explosion of tics afterward. The control, which can be exerted from seconds to hours at a time, may merely postpone and exacerbate the ultimate expression of the tic. In alien hand syndrome, the afflicted individual's limb will produce meaningful behaviors without the intention of the subject. The clinical definition requires feeling that one limb is foreign or has a will of its own, together with observable involuntary motor activity, emphasis in original. This syndrome is often a result of damage to the corpus callosum, either when it is severed to treat intractable epilepsy or due to a stroke. A standard neurological explanation is that the felt will reported by the speaking left hemisphere does not correspond with the actions performed by the non-speaking right hemisphere, thus suggesting that the two hemispheres may have independent senses of will. Similarly, one of the most important first-rank diagnostic symptoms of schizophrenia is the delusion of being controlled by an external force. People with schizophrenia will sometimes report that, although they are acting in the world, they did not initiate or will the particular actions they performed. This is sometimes likened to being a robot controlled by someone else. Although the neural mechanisms of schizophrenia are not yet clear, one influential hypothesis is that there is a breakdown in brain systems that compare motor commands with the feedback received from the body, known as proprioception, leading to attendant hallucinations and delusions of control. Section, Determinism and Emergent Behavior. In Generative Philosophy of Cognitive Sciences and Evolutionary Psychology, free will is assumed not to exist. However, an illusion of free will is created within this theoretical context due to the generation of infinite or computationally complex behavior from the interaction of a finite set of rules and parameters. Thus, the unpredictability of the emerging behavior from deterministic processes leads to a perception of free will, even though free will as an ontological entity is assumed not to exist. In this picture, even if the behavior could be computed ahead of time, no way of doing so will be simpler than just observing the outcome of the brain's own computations. As an illustration, some strategy board games have rigorous rules in which no information, such as a card's face value, is hidden from either player and no random events, such as dice rolling, occur in the game. Nevertheless, strategy games like chess, and especially Go, with its simple deterministic rules, can have an extremely large number of unpredictable moves. By analogy, emergences suggest that the experience of free will emerges from the interaction of finite rules and deterministic parameters that generate infinite and unpredictable behavior. Yet, if all these events were accounted for, and there were a known way to evaluate these events, the seemingly unpredictable behavior would become predictable. Sailier Autonoma and the Generative Sciences model emergent processes of social behavior on this philosophy, showing the experience of free will to be a gift of ignorance or a product of incomplete information. Section in Hindu philosophy. The six orthodox schools of thought in Hindu philosophy do not agree with each other entirely on the question of free will. For the Samkhya, for instance, matter is without any freedom, and soul lacks any ability to control the unfolding of matter. The only real freedom consists in realizing the ultimate separateness of matter and self. For the Yoga school, only Ishvara is truly free, and its freedom is also distinct from all feelings, thoughts, actions, or wills, and is thus not at all a freedom of the will. The metaphysics of the Nyaya and Vaisheshika schools strongly suggest a belief in determinism, but do not seem to make explicit claims about determinism or free will. A quotation from a well-known Vedantist offers a good example of the worry about free will in the Hindu tradition. Therefore, we see at once that there cannot be any such thing as free will. The very words are a contradiction, because will is what we know, and everything that we know is within our universe, and everything within our universe is molded by conditions of time, space, and causality. To acquire freedom, we have to get beyond the limitations of this universe. It cannot be found here. Close quote. On the other hand, the more theistic versions of Hinduism have often emphasized the importance of free will. The doctrine of the karma in Hinduism requires both that we pay for our actions in the past and that our actions in the present be free enough to allow us to deserve the future and reward or punishment that we will receive for our present actions. A philosopher from this perspective puts it this way: fate is past karma, free will is present karma. Both are really one, that is, karma, though they may differ in the matter of time. There can be no conflict when they are really one. Fate, as I told you, is the resultant of the past exercise of your free will. By exercising your free will in the past, you brought on the resultant fate. By exercising your free will in the present, I want you to wipe out your past record if it hurts you, or to add to it if you find it enjoyable. In any case, whether for acquiring more happiness or for reducing misery, you have to exercise your free will in the present. A section in Buddhist philosophy. Buddhism accepts both freedom and determinism, or something similar to it, but rejects the idea of an agent, and thus the idea that freedom is a free will belonging to an agent. The Buddha wrote, quote, "There is free action, there is retribution, but I see no agent that passes out from one set of momentary elements into another one, except the connection of those elements." Close quote. Buddhism takes something like causal determinism as one of its central doctrines. This doctrine is often translated as dependent co-origination and is a part of the theory of karma in Buddhism. However, denials of freedom are taken to be in danger of undermining the efforts of Buddhists to make moral progress. The belief that all happiness and suffering arise from previous actions is considered a wrong view in Theravada Buddhism, for instance. Because Buddhists also reject agenthood, the traditional compatibilist strategies are closed to them as well. Instead, the Buddhist philosophical strategy is to examine the metaphysics of causality. Ancient India had active fights about the nature of causality, with Jains, various other sects, and Buddhists all taking slightly different lines. In many ways, the Buddhist position is closer to a theory of conditionality than a theory of causality, especially as it is expounded by the great adept. A contemporary American monk puts it this way: "The Buddha's teachings on karma are interesting because it's a combination of causality and free will. If things were totally caused, there'd be no way you could develop a skill. Your actions would be totally predetermined. If there was no causality at all, skills would be useless because things would be constantly changing without any kind of rhyme or reason to them. But it's because there is an element of causality, and because there is this element of free will, you can develop skills in this life." Section in Theology. The theological doctrine of divine foreknowledge is often alleged to be in conflict with free will. After all, if God knows exactly what will happen, right down to every choice one makes, the status of choices as free will is called into question. If God had timelessly true knowledge about one's choices, this would seem to constrain one's freedom. This problem is related to the Aristotelian problem of the sea battle. Tomorrow, there will or will not be a sea battle. If there will be one, then it seems that it was true yesterday that there would be one. Then it would be true, necessarily, that the sea battle will occur. If there won't be one, then by similar reasoning, it is necessary that it won't occur. This means that the future, whatever it is completely fixed by past truths, true propositions about the future. However, some philosophers follow William of Ockham in holding that necessity and possibility are defined with respect to a given point in time and a given matrix of empirical circumstances, and so something that is merely possible from the perspective of one observer may be necessary from the perspective of an omniscient. Some philosophers follow Philo of Alexandria in holding that free will is a feature of a human soul, and thus that animals lack free will. Jewish philosophy stresses that free will is a product of the intrinsic human soul, using the word neshama, which comes from the Hebrew root meaning breath. In Islam, the theological issue is not usually how to reconcile our free will with God's foreknowledge, but with God's jabar, or divine commanding power. Al-Ash'ari developed an acquisition or dual agency form of compatibilism in which human free will and divine jabar were both asserted, and which became a cornerstone of the dominant Ash'ari position. The philosopher Soren Kierkegaard claimed that divine omnipotence cannot be separated from divine goodness. As a truly omnipotent and good being, God could create beings with true freedom over God. Furthermore, God would voluntarily do so because the greatest good which can be done for a being, greater than anything else that one can do for it, is to be truly free. Alvin Plantinga's free will defense is a contemporary expansion of this theme, adding how God, free will, and evil are consistent. Wikipedia article on free will, read on the 15 September 2006 version. All text is available under the terms of the GNU license. Wikipedia is a registered trademark of the Wikimedia Foundation, Incorporated.